here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I'm Ryan McQueenie, a content writer here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, September 29th, and we're here to recap this week's biggest stories in the investment and financial world. Some more headlines out of Washington, D.C. this week as President Trump continued to double down on his war of words against the NFL and its protests for racial equality. But more importantly, we saw the president unveiled some of the first key details related to the GOP's tax plan.
Yeah, this tax plan, which we've been hearing little whispers about for quite some time, it's been kind of the tax plan that's coming, the tax plan that must not be named for months now, is going to be the next attempt at serious policymaking after the GOP, of course, could not pass its Obamacare repeal despite another kind of last-ditch effort in the Graham-Cassidy bill. And now it will hit that weird end of September deadline where now they'll need the 60 votes to, in October, they'll need the 60 votes, so they definitely won't get it done. It's a whole weird process thing there. It's like a much more complex version of the Schoolhouse Rock, how a bill becomes a law. But yeah, Maddie, you actually covered Trump's speech live. This was a big event to unveil the plan. So could
he looked freshly tanned too, and I will say I'm not judging. I don't judge people who do go tanning in the winter. I mean, kudos to them if they want to have a fresh glow. Uh-huh. All power to them. Uh-huh. But yeah, he was glowing. So I did watch the speech. It was very interesting. I will say, we were talking about this before. He was very on script. He did not deter too much from the teleprompter.
That's always best case scenario.
Throughout the 25, 30 minutes that it took him to unveil the speech, actually, it was probably longer than that. But I was impressed that he was able to deliver strongly, and was a very strongly worded speech. Like, he was definitely selling this tax plan hard.
Yeah. And like as a unifying thing almost. It was very much, it's good for everyone. This is going to be the thing.
Yeah,
that brings
Democrats,
us together.
Republicans, come together. This is for you, for us, for America. This is how we're going to make America great again. Hashtag MAGA. Like, taxes are going to, it's going to help jobs. It's going to help the economy grow. It's just going to help everything grow. Like, this is what we were meant to do.
Right.
So,
which is kind of his thing, right? The hyperbole, but not necessarily talking about the policy itself.
Yeah.
Did we learn anything about the policy?
We did, but a lot of the details had leaked earlier.
Sure.
So that's where I got a lot of the information from a lot of news outlets. I think the Associated Press had obtained a copy of the tax plan before. But it's quite a sweeping tax overhaul from what we're used to. But I think one of the interesting goals of the new plan is to, quote unquote, be at least as progressive as what we have now.
Okay.
So it's a good thing.
Uh-huh. Maybe an attempt at bipartisan support there.
Yes. And one of the first key pillars is that the number of individual tax brackets will decrease from 7 to 3. So the lowest tax bracket will increase from 10% to 12%. The middle bracket will be 25%, and the highest tax bracket will fall from 39.6% to 35%. But it is unclear who will pay those rates, as the administration has delegated income limit decisions to the House and Senate Tax Writing Committees. So
TBD on
really everything.
Okay. Sounds about right. Yeah.
There may also be a fourth bracket higher than the 35% rate for the country's wealthiest individuals and families.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is 3 brackets, maybe 4 brackets, certain rates, but we're not 100% sure yet. And
we don't know
necessarily what the cutoffs are going to be.
Yes, but we know it's going to make America great again.
Yes.
Okay. And the biggest thing, like the second biggest thing, is that the tax plan proposal doubles the standard deduction that most Americans take. And this is kind of one of the biggest things of the plan. So $12,000 for a single person and $24,000 for a married couple. And this is one of the things that the president stressed the most out of his speech. And another factor that President Trump stressed was that the blueprint was the goal to, quote unquote, restore America's competitive edge.
Okay.
So taxes on businesses are set to see major changes. Small businesses' new top tax rate will be 25%, while corporations' tax rate will fall to 20%.
Interesting. So that definitely getting more to what we've seen Wall Street be anticipating for the majority of this year, this overhaul to the corporate tax code. Of course, then, you know, our listeners will also likely be affected by income tax breaks as well.
He also mentioned getting rid of the estate tax, which is known as the death tax.
Yes.
And he called this the crushing estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a tax imposed on property transferred from a deceased person to their heirs. So whether it's like a farm, for example, and that farmer dies, and then the farm property goes to that farmer's heirs, and the heirs literally cannot pay.
Sure.
For the farm anymore.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting one to that battle, that mini battle within the overall tax plan will be an interesting one to watch play out, because Democrats, in particular, progressive Democrats, are really going to attack the repeal of the estate tax. And that's something where it's interesting to note, because with like income tax, kind of like the basic economic principle is, you can make up for the reduction in revenue by having growth overall.
Sure.
Since the estate tax isn't like a straight up income tax in its basic sense, it works a little bit differently than that. So that whole economic argument becomes even more polarizing. And yeah, that'll be an interesting one to watch play out. Because I think what's interesting is with, you know, keeping it as progressive as possible as far as overall income rates go, you know, you'll find pieces of this that Democrats, especially moderate Democrats, can get behind.
Absolutely.
And so we sometimes on the show poke fun at Trump's rhetoric, especially the hyperbole, as I mentioned before. But
some of these points I found myself agreeing with.
Yeah, some of the key details about this being, you know, something that could benefit the common man definitely makes sense, and has been something that, as I said, Wall Street has been anticipating for quite some time. So nice to finally hear more about it, although still plenty more to hear about.
And now in the future comes the actual legislation.
Yeah.
And like the back and forth, the lawmaking, the actual rules, and who pays what, and
it'll be a very, very complicated legislative process. And it'll be, you know, you've seen GOP representatives basically across the board say, we want to get this done by the end of the calendar year. Well, you think about how much time Congress takes off around the holiday season. Are they going to be able to pull it off? We'll see. That'll be probably the biggest thing to note here, is when is this going to happen? But sure, a lot of things to digest. Thanks for your key takeaways. Going to move on to one of our favorite companies. I'm going to just throw that out there. One of our favorite companies on the show, NVIDIA. We pick and choose favorites, to be fair.
True.
NVIDIA has emerged.
It's one of your favorite companies.
Yes, certainly. NVIDIA, more news out of the graphics chip making giant, held a conference in China, in Beijing specifically, on Monday, and announced that the company has made a deal to supply its artificial intelligence hardware to some of the biggest names in Chinese technology, including Alibaba, Baidu, and Tencent. So all of these companies will each be individually upgrading their massive data centers to NVIDIA's Volta-based platform, which offers greater speed and scalability for AI training and inferencing. Sorry,
love
that
word,
mouthful.
Inferencing.
Previously, they had been using NVIDIA's Pascal architecture. So this is...
And this is not the Pascal from the movie Tangled.
Different thing.
It's not the little chameleon from Disney's Tangled.
Okay.
If anyone was
Thanks
thinking
for the
of
clarification
that. That's literally there. The first thing I thought of when I was reading Pascal.
Okay.
I was like, oh, the chameleon that is kind of weird and... Anyways, moving on. It's been a long week.
It's important to note, though, that they're upgrading from NVIDIA's past architecture because, you know, not necessarily a new relationship being built, but kind of a widespread upgrade. The Volta-based chips, which have 21 billion transistors, offer 5 times the performance compared to these Pascal-based chips. We'll say, love NVIDIA, love the graphics chip market right now. Mm-hmm. Don't necessarily know what the fact that it has 21 billion transistors means from a performance standpoint, but we do know that the step up into Volta is increasing your computing performance by a significant magnitude. So there, that's my dumbed down explanation of it. So this is a big thing to note, that NVIDIA is maintaining these relationships in China. We know that they have developed similar partnerships with U.S. cloud firms like Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, Facebook, and many more. Besides these specific cloud deals, NVIDIA has also inked deals with China's leading original equipment manufacturers, including Inspur and Lenovo, who will now use NVIDIA's HGX reference architecture to offer Volta-based systems for hyperscale data centers. And of course, kind of in a reference to something we covered last week, this news came just a handful of days after we learned that AMD may or may not be working with Tesla on a self-driving car AI chip. So it seems that our big graphics chip makers are quite busy these days. Speaking of a company that has had a busy week, Maddie, I'm going to bounce it over to you for the latest from an up-and-coming video streaming company.
Yeah, so pretty popular among cord cutters is the name Roku. Definitely. I have one. I have the little Roku stick. It's kind of getting, I would say it's on the older side. I probably could upgrade if I wanted to.
Good time to upgrade.
It would be a good time to upgrade. Do you own a Roku?
My mother has a Roku stick in back at my family home in Michigan. And yeah, that was a big upgrade for my mom. That was her first step into the video streaming world.
My mother
Roku.
Also has a Roku, but my parents still are, I guess, bogged down by cable, if you will. I guess not bogged down, but they're tied to their cable package. My dad loves the Discovery Channel.
Sure.
Can't give up a Discovery Channel or I don't know what he watches. Not Duck Dynasty, but weird shows on A&E.
Do they still make Duck Dynasty?
I feel like they do reruns
of
that.
That's probably a hit.
You know, he watches those like adventure shows where they like the one where they like trap you in like the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And you have to survive.
Naked
Survivor
and afraid.
Shows. He really likes those.
Dual survival.
Regardless.
Yes. Discovery Channel.
We need to figure out how to get those on Roku, and then everyone would be set. But anyways, Roku started trading on Wall Street on Thursday, had a really pretty successful IPO. They trade under the ticker ROKU. The stock debuted on the NASDAQ and soared as much as 30% above its IPO price initially during the day, but it closed up over 67% and closed the day at $23.50 per share. So again, pretty successful for the first day of trading. But overall, the company priced its 18 million share initial public offering at $14 per share, which was at the top end of its expected price range. But Roku, as we know, is known for those tiny little black boxes that you can access Netflix and other streaming services with. So right now, Roku makes most of its money selling this hardware, and it generated almost $400 million in revenue last year, just under $400 million, which was up 25% from $319.9 million in 2015. And in the first 6 months of this year, revenues were $199.7 million, which represented a 23% jump from the year-ago period. Nevertheless, the company thinks advertising could actually be a bigger source of revenue in the near future. And in an interview with CNBC, CEO Anthony Wood said that advertising is our bread and butter. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that analogy. As the world moves to streaming, that means all TV advertising is moving to streaming as well. there is a huge opportunity to become the next generation advanced TV ad platform. That's pretty confident.
Yeah.
From a
bold.
It's a pretty bold statement.
I want to say also that I need a John Oliver now, and here's this supercut of CEOs describing their product as their bread and butter.
That would be perfect.
Because I like how in this example, it is absolutely not their bread and butter currently. He's like speculating that it could be later down the line.
So please give us your money.
Like, I know the vast majority of our revenue is making the hardware device, and you would think naturally that is our bread and butter based on the definition of that term, but no, it's this thing.
It's just this fictional thing. But customers, Roku currently has 15 million active monthly active accounts and boasts 6.74 billion hours of content streamed.
Wow.
And the platform has about 3,000 available channels, which really boggles my mind.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, well, not really when I go to search for something and I'm like, oh, there's this I can access from Roku. And according to research from eMarketer, Roku claims 32.6% of the country's 150 million connected TV users last year, which was ahead of Google, Amazon, and Apple.
Take that.
So, should Amazon and Apple be worried? Potentially.
I would happen to think that I would probably lean more to thinking that it's more of a should Roku be worried about those guys type of thing.
Well,
because they got a head start on, I mean, they were out before.
Well, here's
Roku
the thing.
Roku was around before the Apple TV, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like the first thing.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it seems like they already have that figured out if they're already thinking about it.
They've been able to
advertising.
Stay a competitor.
Sure.
Even as the Apple TV came out, even as the Amazon Fire Stick came out. The Google Chromecast came out. So they've been able to, like, you know, become even more of a competitor than it already was.
Sure.
And I guess, like, the one thing to me that makes them stand out is they don't engage in that weird petty tech rivalry with, like, the other three do.
They're on the outside of that, for sure.
Google has taken away the rights to YouTube from Amazon Echo Show. Like, Apple didn't allow Netflix to be on its Apple TV app originally.
Yeah,
it's like this very like
that's a really
weird like high school-ish drama. And Roku was like, well, we just want to be inclusive and allow everyone to be in our platform. So
yeah,
you should just, you know, buy our device.
Yeah. And
because we have everything.
For the companies that are, you know, creating the streaming services, if you're looking at 33% of the country's connected TV users are using Roku device, like, you absolutely need to be on that platform then if you're offering a streaming service. So that's a really good point. I hadn't even really thought about that there's tons of infighting with those other companies, probably for a bunch of other reasons, whereas Roku's business is very sharp and clearly defined.
Yeah,
and it seems like
that's a good way to put it too.
Company has a good direction. So it'll be interesting to see.
Plus advertising.
Yeah, there we go. Advertising coming down the pipeline. So I'm going to shift, keeping things in the world of tech, shift over to BlackBerry. Have you heard that name in a while?
Not since I stopped. I did have a BlackBerry once. I liked it.
Yeah.
I felt really cool when I had my BlackBerry.
So it's actually the opposite of the gone for but not forgotten
And I
phrase.
Pretended to be a CEO. When I typed on it, really so, important business
so
person.
We'll actually touch on that iconic BlackBerry device in a little bit here. But as I was saying, the opposite of the phrase "gone but not forgotten," forgotten maybe by some, but certainly not gone yet. Shares of BlackBerry gained more than 13.5% on Thursday after the company posted its second quarter earnings report. It's actually been a shift to a software focus that has been paying off for the Canadian tech giant, and investors were ecstatic about the company's surprise profit and improved guidance. That's always what we're looking for after an earnings report, not just the earnings beat, but upping the guidance as well. Before special items and one-time costs, BlackBerry posted earnings of 5 cents per share. Again, a profit. Investors rejoicing over a true profit there, beating the Zacks consensus estimate of a 1 cent loss. Revenues were down nearly 30% to $249 million, but that was enough to surpass our consensus estimate of $231 million. It's actually quite an impressive beat there. Last year, BlackBerry actually stopped manufacturing its iconic smartphone to focus on software. BlackBerry phones are still out there. New BlackBerry phones are still out there, I should say, in that I believe there was a debut of a new device earlier this year. The company actually last year outsourced the production of its hardware to its manufacturing partners. So as its own corporation, BlackBerry Inc., it's fully focused on its software division. The company, you know, works on a number of different software platforms, including kind of probably most noticeable to the average user would be the mobile OS that works with BlackBerry phones. But they've really worked on expanding their enterprise level mobile software and data protection software. If you actually remember back to, what was it, like a month or so, maybe a month or two ago, when that WannaCry hack happened, BlackBerry emerged as a significant player in the wake of that, because their data protection software was something that would be a good response to that type of malware attack. In the latest quarter, the company's software and services revenue was up 26% year over year. And thanks to these results, BlackBerry said that it now expects full year revenue between $920 and $950 million, which is higher than our current consensus estimate of $918.5 million. So yeah, I just wanted to highlight BlackBerry because it was getting a lot of attention on social media on Thursday. It's been one of those companies that has had kind of a simultaneous, really energized following of investors that are very bullish on the company, and then also a very loud group of detractors who are very bearish on the company. Of course, you know, the first reaction to the mention of the name is the old school mid-2000s full keyboard
BlackBerry.
Yeah, BlackBerry device just could go through a nuclear fallout and keep working. So those things were really tough devices and kind of just defined an era of mobile devices.
Yeah, because I can send a 300-word email through my BlackBerry, and it's just like, of that time, yeah, no other phone could do that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it was slick.
Not that I needed to send a 300-word email back in 2007.
It looked, but looked really cool. You felt cool holding one. Turns out that didn't last very long. And, you know, as smartphones adapted, history will have it that other companies adapted more effectively to changing consumer trends. And that's no longer, BlackBerry is no longer a smartphone company. I, off the top of my head, can't even think of a company that has pivoted so quickly. A company that has pivoted from being at a higher level than BlackBerry has to be so iconic and recognized for one thing, and to pivot away from that so quickly. You know, I'm sure there's long-term investors out there who are saying it's not been a quick pivot at all, but it's been interesting to watch. And this year, it'll be interesting to watch going forward. And me, I'm more of an optimistic person. I say good on BlackBerry for making the right call and shifting to software. You'll have some other people out there who are saying, give it some time, we'll see if this actually lasts. But yeah, thought it was an interesting story. Certainly a story or a company we will be keeping our eyes on more in the future. I think that just about does it for us this week. For some reason, now that we're on the topic of BlackBerry, though, the only thing I can think of, for some reason, the person who I'm thinking of with a BlackBerry in their hands the most is Ari Gold from Entourage. And Jeremy Piven. So, but that was exactly what I'm saying, where it just, the BlackBerry phone was culture. That was the culture for such a long time. Not really the case anymore. Now it's an iPhone.
And then the T-Mobile, what was their iconic phone? Not the T-Mobile.
The Razor?
No, not the Motorola Razor, but the big one.
Did it flip on its side and slide up? Yeah, that was a good one in middle school to have.
The sidekick.
That's what it's called.
I just remember Paris Hilton using it and like getting photographed in it. Like it would like show up like in Star, like Us Weekly, and I would like see it like in the grocery store. And I'm like, oh my God, I really want that phone. I never had the chance to have that phone, but I did have a magenta, like a magenta Motorola Razr. And I would like flip it and I would be like, I am literally the coolest person and
at,
in the world.
At the exact same time that those phones were really cool for the millennial generation that was kind of just getting their, maybe even the younger half of the millennials who were getting their first phones ever. Mm-hmm. At the very same time, BlackBerry was, you know, the CEO's version of that.
Yeah.
It was the people who were getting business done. They were doing it. You were texting all your friends.
Well, it wasn't until just recently, when Barack Obama was still president, he fairly like late into his presidency, he switched from a BlackBerry to an iPhone. Like that was news.
Yeah,
funny.
And that's the president.
Funnily enough,
that's the president,
like, that was
United
the president.
States. Yeah. So
he was still using a BlackBerry.
Interesting. I did not know that President Obama was on the BlackBerry train for so long.
Yeah. But I don't know if it was his first term or a second term.
It speaks more so, all of these anecdotes speak even more so to the kind of remarkable story that the company has had over the past several years.
It's a cultural icon.
Mm-hmm. And trying now to be a cultural icon in a completely different business area. So we'll see how it works out. This earnings report being interpreted as many as one of the first signs that they're headed in the right direction. That does it for us this week. Feel free to shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com if you felt we missed any things. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.